It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
And we're coming alive for the Built for Tough Studio. Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti. It's Boomer and Geo on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. And wherever you are in the free Odyssey app, good Thursday morning. A feel-good summer Thursday for the Mets fan, a frustrating summer Thursday for the Yankees fan. You could go positive, you could go negative today with New York baseball, but it was an afternoon game first with the Mets before we get into the Yankees, and we'll talk both of them in the first segment. But Francisco Lindor, the streak of 0 for 30 over as he delivers. Sean Manaea gets his first win of the year. Pete Alonso, a home run, a four-out save for Edwin Diaz, and a sweep of the Angels at home. And the Mets look like the dominant team at home that they were early on in the season and have jumped back into first place. And then you get the Yankees with all the issues that they have had the entire year with the bad defense, errors, and now on top of it, the one guy that you could count on more than anybody in the rotation, you can't count on right now in Max Fried. So their issues are piling up. So it depends where you want to go. Boomer, you can go positive, you can go negative this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Doing great. I will start with the Yankees. Now, it's not Max Fried's problem that, you know, Cody Bellinger loses a ball and can't find it. That Oswaldo Peraza's you never know what you're going to get over there. Anthony Volpe has another error. You know, I think Jason Dominguez out in the outfield leaves a lot to be desired at the moment. So I would tell you that Max Fried, I thought, actually was okay last night. And if everybody was doing their job, I don't know whether or not they would have won. He did give up some home runs. But the fact of the matter is it's the field follies, if you will, that did them in last night. And it was really frustrating to watch, especially if you are a Yankee fan. So, and for the Mets, that's exactly what they needed to do. Sweep. Now they go on the road. They're going to go out and see San Francisco and San Diego, come back maybe 4-2, hopefully 3-3 at worst. And, you know, now you got your season going. I mean, that's exactly what we were hoping for, that they were going to get themselves on a winning streak and to sweep the Angels, who came in on pretty, I think they were playing pretty well, and, you know, do it the way that they did it and, you know, have everybody really be a part of winning. That's exactly what you're hoping for when you're this late in July, you're getting ready to get into August, and it's going to be, you know, a sprint to the finish between them and the Phillies.
Yeah, and this was we started the week going, you know, the Mets don't feel like they are out of their funk yet, and it's because they weren't. This morning, it feels like they're out of their funk. It feels finally after a huge week, and you get a day game with a humongous crowd and Francisco Lindor with all the support as he comes up to the plate and his song is playing and he steps out of the box to take a moment because he appreciates a Mets fan that has his back even during this horrendous streak. And it just it felt like the team that we had seen early on in the season. And then with another Phillies loss, you jump ahead of them a half game. So, yeah, you don't want to go out west, get smacked around, and have all this goodwill that you built up turn right around. And I don't believe that will happen. And then it's really all eyes on David Stearns. What will he do at the trade deadline? Does he get that center fielder? Does he get that reliever that could change the bullpen? How much is he pushing the chips into the middle of the table in this year in 2025? I can't wait to see that because I'm really curious. I mean, this is now, you know, David Stearns still is new to us. We're learning things about him, how he handles the rotation, how he handles trade deadlines, things like that. So we'll see if he feels like he's got a team that is one of the best in the National League. And obviously, you know, it's not, you know, you got a couple of teams, obviously, in the Central and the Brewers and the Cubs that are very good. We know about the West and the Dodgers have struggled. You know about the Phillies and the Mets. You're going to have to separate yourself somehow, and maybe that team that makes those right deals at the deadline is going to be the one that goes head and shoulders above, so you don't want to be the one that's on the outside looking in.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, for the Mets, I mean, one guy's missing, and that's Jesse Winker. Starling Marte was back in the lineup yesterday. For the most part, they're getting healthy. They're getting a lot of players back. There's not a lot of room to be adding people. You're going to have to, if you're going to add an outfielder that can play center field or one of the corner outfields, if Jeff McNeil or Brandon Nimmo will play center field, you're looking basically for somebody that can hit because, you know, Tyrone Taylor is not he's an out waiting to happen.
Yes.
And they know that. And they also, I think, would like to keep him on the roster just simply because of defensive, you know, positioning late in the game or something. And it's unfortunate that, you know, he's had every opportunity to get a hold of this position, be an offense. He doesn't have to be an offensive juggernaut. Just do something. And he just looks overwhelmed at the plate. I don't know if you feel the same way that I do.
He shouldn't be an everyday player. I mean, they went out and got Jose Siri in the offseason, who hurt himself and was out for the year. Tyrone Taylor was going to be someone that was going to relieve him. Not that Siri's known for his offense, but certainly better than Tyrone Taylor. So that was a blow to the roster build that David Stearns thought he had, you know, going into the season. So now, is that right player for this team at this time out there who can contribute to the lineup? Now, we talked about this with Jerry yesterday, but some of these offensive struggles certainly get magnified when the top players on your team aren't contributing in the way that they should. So, you know, if you have Alonso, Nimmo, Lindor, Soto all doing their thing and at least being who they are, not even more than what they are, then you're not thinking about the black hole of Tyrone Taylor and some of the other guys at the bottom of the lineup.
Well, the thing about it is that yesterday Soto was 0-for-4, but the three guys around him
were
participating.
Yep.
And, you know, that's baseball. That's what they should be doing. It's a team game, and not every player is going to be in the middle of every single game in order to lead his team to a win. But when you look at the other guys around him, and if Lindor now is going to start to wake up a little bit, maybe get out of town, maybe that's a good thing for him. Now you have pretty much the foundation of the team that you're hoping is going to make it all the way to the World Series. And the question is do they have enough arms in the bullpen? Is their starting pitching, like Kodai Senga, is he going to hold up? You know, I mean, it's just been like so frustrating watching him. And then it was nice to see Sean Manaea do what he did yesterday. And they kept his pitch count low, below 90. And unfortunately, Buto gave up a couple of hits and a couple of runs. But other than that, the bullpen did their job. Now, look, this is never easy for them to go out west.
No, I mean, these teams are, they're good teams, obviously. It's not like you're going out there and playing the dregs of the National League. I think the difference between the Mets being a team that maybe gets to where they were last year as opposed to getting past where they were last year and getting to the World Series is going to be contributions from these younger guys. I mean, you got it from Mark Vientos last year. You hope that Francisco Alvarez does it. And then you need these starting pitchers to be healthy and really good. So those are the two things. You need Senga. Give me Senga, Manaea, Peterson pitching really, really well going into the postseason and healthy. And, you know, obviously Clay Holmes has been pretty good for them as well. But those guys I trust the most. You get those guys going in the right direction, end of the season, healthy, and then just give me one of these. Give me Francisco Alvarez, Vientos, Beatty, one of these guys smacking the baseball, and then I love our chances.
All right. So their starting five is pretty set up right now. This should have been their starting five, I believe, coming out of spring training. And now whether or not you're going to get any of these other starters back for either a spot start or a spot in the bullpen. That's the other thing. You remember Tyler McGill was a bullpen arm at one point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there are options for David Stearns is what I'm saying. But he definitely has to find, an offensive outfielder. And I don't know if that's Jesse Winker, if that's what they're thinking, or if they're going to go all in for somebody else that could be available that could be an offensive threat. Because you can never have, as we found out in this league, like when you think about the Dodgers lineup when it's fully healthy, 1-9, I mean, you know, the bottom of that lineup was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And that's what you want the Mets' bottom of the lineup to be. And, you know, if Alvarez is going to be back and he's going to do what he's going to do, he's going to hit that towards the bottom of the lineup. But, again, I just think that, you know, for me, eventually, either Vientos has got to get going here, and if Alvarez is with him, you know, the only really hole you have, if it's not those two guys, then it's Taylor in center field. I'm like, everybody else should be okay. I mean, like, offensively, they should be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just now that you have most of the team healthy outside of Jesse Winker, you feel like, yeah, there's not a lot of holes on this team, and that's why they were projected to be at the top of the division and back into the postseason. So, yeah, it's just, this is why I'm really, Like, what is David Stearns, even though his press conference, you can't really tell from general managers' press conferences, but I mean, if I had to make a decision and project into the future from what he said, if he was going to make a big deal or not, I would say no. Probably not.
He may feel like the guys that he has on the injured list may be able to refortify or fortify the team moving forward. I mean, that would be interesting. That would be really interesting. I kind of feel like they have to do something. Just to pacify us as a fan base. Like, well, don't you feel like Brian Cashman's definitely got to do something? I mean, after watching this last night, and I can understand why John Boy and John Boy Media and those guys were all over Aaron Boone for, you know, the intensity aspect of the Yankees. And when you watch this last night, and I know that, you know, Aaron Boone got thrown out, and I know that he was arguing balls and strikes, and rightfully so, by the way.
Yeah.
He wasn't wrong. But it's just that, you know, that's a game. Like if you're a fan watching your team play that way in the field, it's like,
well, I mean, also coming off the fact that, you know, the Dodgers were going to beat the Yankees in the World Series no matter what. But
why? Because they made them throw the ball.
Yeah.
They made them feel the ball.
But that game five is still sticking in the minds of Yankee fans, where it was like, you know, we had an opportunity to get that to game six, and we just, Aaron Judge drops the ball, obviously the play between Cole and Rizzo, and it's like, now you come back this season, and you're just, the left side of the infield is a sieve, and you have too many of these games where you feel like if you actually were a competent defensive team, you could not be four games back in the division.
And, of course, Ben Rice is over at first base, and the ball finds him.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they got guys playing out of position.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they got Jazz Chisholm playing out of position. Well, they got Ben Rice playing out of position. I mean, it just doesn't, yeah. I mean, there has to be a real change in this team at the deadline if they expect to get back to where they were last year. Well, right now, I mean, they're not even close to it because they're four games back of the Blue Jays.
And watching the game last night, so the Blue Jays are running all over the base pass. They're diving in head first. I mean, I get the kind of viewpoint that certain Yankee fans would have about the intensity of your team. When you're watching the other team that you're playing against and you're trying to overcome who have overcome you, diving into, you know, head first into bases, making all the defensive plays, coming up with the big hits, I mean, that is a very frustrating and a very eye-opening series. Once again, this is the second series now in a row against the Toronto Blue Jays up there in Toronto where they really haven't had a sniff.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like the Blue Jays are in a position where, like, they can kind of sense that the Yankees are just sort of teetering there and they just want to push them down and kind of bury them if they can. And it feels like maybe they want it a little bit more right now. If I'm Aaron Boone, I'm saying, well, how could you say that when you're not around the team? Like, he was yelling back at John Boy, I don't care what these guys say in a post-game conference. You know, I know how much these guys care, and you can't judge it by what you're watching. But then again, when you watch it, you're like, wow, I mean, this Blue Jays team is not messing around. They've got one of the best home records in baseball, and that's for a reason.
You could just see in their dugout. I mean, I know exactly. The dugout looks confident. The dugout, like, you remember Guerrero said, I'll never play for the Yankees.
Yeah.
I hate the Yankees. It's, right. It's kind of like the guy up in Toronto.
Right. Until
basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Masai Ujiri.
That's right. Yeah. And
Vladimir, what is it about Toronto hating New York?
Yeah. But then again, Vladimir Guerrero backtracked on that when he was going for his contract. It was talking about
he might the Yankees.
Hit, right. Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know how much he hates the Yankees or wouldn't play for the Yankees. And when he needed them for leverage, he kind of, you know, I didn't really mean that. But yeah. And he got his contract. So good for him. But yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, you said it well the other day, like the New York teams are hated by everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. Unless you're a fan of them. The Knicks became the most hated team in the NBA. The Yankees have always been that team. You either love them or hate them. And that's what you get, especially teams in the AL East that have been watching the Yankees dominate for so long. Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays have had minimal success compared to the Yankees. A lot of talk, a lot of, like, prospects, a lot of this team's the next team on the rise and have never been able to do it. Well, they're in the midst of doing it right now.
They are right in the middle of it. And, you know, by watching these games, they are head and shoulders above the Yankees. I mean, it's not even close at the moment.
No, it feels like that. I mean, it feels like they are the Astros to the Yankees right now. That's what it felt like in this series.
Where would you put the Yanks right now in the American League?
Well, obviously, they're not as good as the Blue Jays. They're not as good as the Tigers, who have had their struggles recently. But still, Houston, you always got to give respect to Houston. So, I mean, I you know, they're 4-5 range in the American
amazing.
League.
Which is amazing.
I mean, do you disagree? Agree?
Well, I agree with you a bit, but at the beginning of the year, they got off to a good start. Everything was playing well, and we all thought, and I'm probably guilty of this too, but you know, we always remind people it is a 162 game season, and a lot of things can happen. We all thought that the American League was going to be a cakewalk.
Well, it was last year. We had the evidence to prove that. It's not this year. The Astros are back to being a dominant force. You got a team in the division who's actually meeting expectations and actually exceeding expectations in the Blue Jays. And you got a Tigers team that was the best team in baseball until they hit this little bit of a skid and have the best pitcher in baseball in Skubal. So, yeah, I mean, there's no cakewalk anymore.
No.
Not at all. It was real easy to get to the World Series for the Yankees. They still had to win the series. They did. But this year's you know what? Different kettle of fish.
What?
A whole different kettle of fish this year. You've heard that before, right?
Hey, I've heard kettle of fish, yeah.
A whole different kettle of fish.
Okay.
You know what we got here?
What do we got here now?
We got a horse of a different color.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Not a cakewalk.
Not a cakewalk. No, 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 no.
And I think the Yankee fan knows that. And the pressure mounting on Aaron Boone, mounting on Brian Cashman.
We'll
probably just get a contract extension at the end of the year for another 50 years till you die contract extension. The Yankee fans, the minds will be blown.
He'll do something. He'll do something. He always does. You know that. I know that. And it's probably going to be a big thing. Whatever it is, it's going to be big. You can feel it.
You can feel it in your bones.
Yeah, because you know now 5 games dropping. They got to stop. They got to stop the drop. They got to re kind of, you know, energize the baseball team. And, you know, I could see a couple moves being made in order to try to do that, you know, and it will have a profound effect on the dugout, no question, especially if they go out and get the guys that, you know, we believe that they're going after.
Well, hopefully they figure it out this weekend because they play the Phillies, and we know the Mets and the Phillies in a battle for the top spot in the NL East.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network on this summer July Thursday. Jerry Recco is here. He's got the highlights and lowlights from the baseball last night. What's up, Jerry?
Oh, we've got lowlights for you. And I could not believe what I was watching. So we like to do this from time to time. We will sum up the Yankee game in 1 minute and 3 seconds, if you would allow me.
Bouncing ball left side, Max Field tries to throw home and attack in and out of the glove of Vizcarra. Scoring is Snyder, and then scoring is George Springer. There's a breaking ball. Jazz Chisholm rises up, makes the catch, throws the first, gets away from Rice. As Vladdy had gotten back to first, the ball gets away from Rice, and now Guerrero gets the second.
Not good.
Oh, boy.
Towards the line, Bellinger, their territory, lost in the lights, oh no, bouncing in the corner, running at full steam is Clements, a second, coming to third, and they get it back in. Wow.
Couple more guys.
Oh.
Hit to the right side, backhanded, off the glove by Rice, everybody safe, run, score 6-4 Toronto.
One
line driving in a gap, left center field. There's a hanger, and it gets by Dominguez.
Yankees not exactly putting on a clinic defensively.
Rough night in Toronto.
Not even Ringling Brothers played that song longer than that.
I give Michael Kay credit because he was talking about Clement coming out of the batter's box on that ball that Bellinger couldn't find.
Yeah.
And he ended up on third base. He was running. He goes, you got to give him credit because when he ran out of that box, he was running like that wasn't going to be caught.
Yeah.
Now, Vlad Guerrero was running like he thought.
It
was a base hit. And all of a sudden, they screw it up in the outfield. The amazing thing is, like, the Max Fried play where he gets the ball on
God.
The...
What is he doing?
I don't... It's a weird spot, you know? Like, again, it wasn't like... I mean, I don't know if the third baseman, Peraza, could get this. And even if he does get it, they're still going to score a run there. But the fact that he doesn't cover home plate...
Yeah, it makes it worse.
Yankee pitchers have problems covering their bases. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, especially when the first baseman waves them off, yeah, that, like in the World Series.
I don't know what it is, man.
This was bad, though, because also with Fried, he walked two guys. He also had the two wild pitches in the inning. I mean, it was a mess.
He was a mess. And by the way, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I was a left-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
When he tried to make that play on the third baseline, I was just like,
He's falling right, throwing left.
It's an impossible play.
Not good.
But you do eat it in that spot?
I think you got to eat it.
I think you just suck it up. It's an infield single, run scores, get the next guy.
It's too bad that, you know, Vlad Guerrero's out there, you know, thinking he's going to smash one into the gap or something. Mm-hmm. Hits that damn thing.
Little dribbler,
yeah. But I think you got to eat it, don't you, Al?
In that situation, got to eat it.
Got to eat it.
8-4 the final as the Blue Jays beat the Yankees. Four errors on the night plus the play. I mean, you can't fault Bellinger. He lost the ball in the lights, but that's really five miscues plus the wild pitches. They lose the challenge on the wild pitch where Ascara looked like he threw out the runner, but he was safe. Okay, whatever. I have to play this to set up the next thing. This was Aaron Boone talking about the defense being poor.
Yeah, just not good enough. And, you know, look, I think we have a very good defensive club, but clearly in the seven games we've played up here, you know, not giving them extra outs
is not good enough. Now you go to the post-game show. Here was Emmanuel with Susan as they were reacting to Boone.
Susan, we've talked about the defense more than a few times. This was ugly tonight.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The manager, however, and this is kind of interesting.
And then she would go on and read the quotes like the one I just played. And then she said this later on after reading a lot of it.
I don't see it. I didn't see this. I must have been watching a different game.
Because he was defending the fact that they are a good defensive club, but it has not gone well in Toronto. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of where they're at. I mean,
Has Booney lost Susan?
I think Boone has lost the fans.
It feels like that. That's what it feels like.
I think
like.
The John Boy thing was very revealing in that he was representing the Yankee fan that wants Boone to act the way he does, like he did when he got tossed last night.
Right.
They want to see that from him in the post game, as opposed to, no, we're good and the guys are fine.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Yankee fan wants to hear Boone ripping his own players.
I agree.
Holding them accountable.
Yep.
And they're not getting that.
And I think they probably are behind closed doors. But it's
not getting any better.
Agreed. Kind of like Willie, when he fills in, a few people have called up complaining about Todd Bowles. And Willie will tell them, Todd Bowles behind closed doors was a maniac.
You thug.
No,
Maybe if the fans saw that more.
There's a totally different personality.
Right.
That he's got. Bill Belichick had that kind of behind the scenes.
Yes.
When you hear his players talking about it, he's a completely different person behind the scenes than he was when he was out in front of the media. And I think Aaron Boone's probably not that different. Every one of these managers tries to get through 162 games, knowing that they're going to have pitfalls along the way, and how you handle yourself in those situations is going to say a lot about how the team's going to react to you.
You know, when you can feel like the weather changing or a thunderstorm's coming, you look in the distance, you see the clouds, maybe the wind picks up. You're like, you know what, something's changing here.
Yeah, and all of a sudden the temperature drops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the first signs of things changing in the Yankee world.
Susan Waltman.
If you lose Susan.
Yeah. Right? Well, they got to win games. Otherwise, this is going to continue. And they got the Phillies coming in over the weekend. Here was Aaron Judge. Why all these defensive issues for this team?
That's tough to say. I think, we haven't been playing that well on defense. You know, we got a lot of things we got to clean up.
I would say so.
You know, he dropped the ball. What I think the Yankee fans should do is take a page out of the Met fan playbook and you know, see how the Met fans were supporting Francisco Lindor, getting behind him. He's in the middle of a terrible slump.
Right.
Give these guys
a standing ovation for
this guy. Look at the Met fans stepping up.
Yep.
That's the kind of fan base you want. You don't want anybody ripping everybody down. You gotta build these guys up. You know, they are human beings and they do have feelings.
Wow. They will have Will Warren starting in that first game against the Phillies tomorrow. Here was Fried. He absolutely, what's that?
What?
Will Warren took, Will Warren, Max Free took ownership of those mishaps in the fifth.
Definitely, you know, not mocking guys definitely isn't going to help. And then just, you know, throwing the ball away, having two more come in, especially, you know, battling. It's a tight ball game there and kind of let it go. It's, you know, it's frustrating. Can't. You know, for me, it just, you know, that can't happen.
And so now they trail the Blue Jays again by four games atop the AL East. In the loss, Dominguez, Volpe, and Judge all did hit home runs. All right, we get to the Mets. You talk about the crowd reaction. Yeah, they were fired up when Francisco Lindor did this.
Taylor at second, Nimmo at first. Big hole on the right side. The 1-2. Line toward left field. There's a base hit for Lindor. Taylor rounds third with that great speed. He scores standing without a throw. Nimmo goes to second. Francisco Lindor snaps the 0-for-31 and gives the Mets a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the third with a single to left field. Fans are on their feet with...
Yes, and good for them,
see,
and
that,
good for him.
See, that's the kind of fan base you want. A fan base that gets behind their team.
Yeah, and no better example of that than Frank Fleming, right?
Oh, yeah, he's right behind the Mets.
Yeah, he never sways.
Here, weren't they just booing the Mets the other night?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm. Here was Lindor appreciating the fan support through a monster slump.
It was special, but not just when I got the hit. You know, they've been supporting me all along, you know. I feel the love, and it's definitely special. For
sure. See, that's beautiful. That is beautiful. Nice. He feels the love, and it's definitely special.
Unlike when you went over to what you thought was going to be to sign an autograph for a fan when you were with the Jets, and the guy told you you sucked.
Yeah, you suck. Get the F out of here.
Mm. That's true.
Look, I tell you, he did a good job of luring me in.
He did. Yes, he did. 6-3, the final score as the Mets complete the sweep of the Angels. Pete Alonso, a three-run homer in this game, says he's doing his best for his guys.
I just want to put my best foot forward every at-bat and give it my all, and I'm just happy I was able to contribute the way I was able to today. Yeah, super stoked. I mean, that was a huge, huge win for us.
Do you think that Bull Durham is his favorite movie?
Would not be surprised.
It's got to be.
Yes, I would not be surprised. Sean Manaea. It was good. Five innings for the win. Mets off tonight in San Francisco tomorrow. They now lead the Phillies by a half game atop the NL East as the Phillies fell to the Red Sox in 11-9-8 in the loss. Bryce Harper hit his 350th career home run. By the way, in the Met game, Mike Trout homered 396 for him and 999 RBIs. The Giants.
Amount of games he's missed.
A lot of games. That is true. We mentioned the Giants. They beat the Braves 9-3. Notable as Justin Verlander got the win. His first win in 17 starts. It's not been a good season for Justin Verlander at the ripe old age.
Yeah, but the wins don't even matter for these guys anymore. It's more about ERA and how many pitches they throw.
It's 17. You're 17 starts without a win?
I mean, you know, they don't even count. They really
What's
don't
the team's
those.
Record in those 17 yes. starts?
Not good, I wouldn't think. I don't know.
We don't know that. Well.
I don't know that, but I would, let's see, if I would tell you, what do you think his record is this season? I'm going to say 1-8, maybe?
Sure, sounds good.
Does that sound good to you? I can't find it quickly, but whatever.
We'll, 2-10.
2-10, let's see here. I pull up the box score. 9-3 was the final. Let's see here. Max Scherzer is now...
Wait, Verlander?
I'm sorry, I confused the two. Verlander is 1-8 with the win with an ERA of 4.80.
Okay.
So they've lost at least 8 of those previous 16 starts. I don't know in the other 8 what they did. I can certainly find that for you if you would like.
Nah, I don't care anymore.
Well, if it helps my argument, I will.
Okay.
Dodgers beat the Twins 4-3. Along the way, you had this happen.
Here's the 0-2 pitch, and Ohtani blasts it in the air. Left center field, carrying back, and make it 5 in a row for Shohei Ohtani.
And that ties the Dodgers' all-time record with, what was it, Al? 6 or 7 others? What was the number?
7 others.
With 7 others in Dodgers history, home runs in 5 straight.
How did Al know that?
I read the article.
Oh, you did? Okay.
There you go. They wound up winning the game 4-3 over Minnesota, and the Pirates beat the Tigers 6-1 as they completed the sweep. Detroit has lost 9 of 10. Football news at Giants camp. Here's Brian Daboll, excited to begin.
This is the start of the season. We've got a long way to go. Got a lot of things we got to continue to improve on day by day. With the goal to be ready to go at the start of the season.
And that's a great way to go with the GM, Joe Shane. Speaking of being ready to go, will Andrew Thomas play week one? We talked about him yesterday landing on the PUP list.
He should be ready for the opener. Again, things change. You can never be 100%, but we're going to take it day by day with him. He's ready. He'll be out there. But, we anticipate him to be ready for the opener.
Which would be good for the Giants. Meantime, the Jets opened camp yesterday with their first practice. Here's their new head coach, Aaron Glenn. We have one goal, like every other team.
They understand that their expectations, like everybody else, to win the Super Bowl. You know, we got it. But we break those expectations down into stages. So the only thing I want those guys to think about what we're trying to create in training camp. And that's what we talked about yesterday for the most part. So,
yeah. So just one step at a time. And where's the Super Bowl this year? Do we know?
It's out in California, isn't it?
Is it L.A. or San Francisco again? Santa Clara, maybe?
I think it's, I want to say
San Francisco. Just Google it. Levi Stadium.
Oh, it is. Yeah, Santa Clara. I'm just looking at Aaron Glenn. He's got a whistle with a Sharpie hanging off of it.
Yeah.
New look. So that's I've never seen that before.
That is a new look. I would agree. Actually,
you guys ever seen that?
No.
I mean, I know that, what's his name? Joe Judge had a pencil in his ear, right?
He did.
So Matt Patricia had a pencil coming out of his hat.
Right.
This is quite resourceful, though. The Sharpie. Yeah, I mean,
you always know where that Sharpie is.
Yes, you do. At Commander's Camp, where is Terry McLaurin? We know he is not reporting to camp. He's in a contract dispute with Washington. Here is his quarterback, Jaden Daniels.
It's just business and NFL. You know, we know Terry's working. We don't really have to worry about him doing any of that, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's still one of our brothers.
And he is obviously the main target of Daniels, who is not worried about chemistry. The deal will get done, and then they will be fine when they're both on the field together again.
If it was last year, it'd probably be different because we didn't know each other. But now, since we have a whole year under our belt and just the relationship we built on and off the field, and, you know, we don't really have egos when it comes to our relationship with each other, so it's going to be seamless, but I know Terry's working, though.
And we'll see when that deal does, in fact, get done. And then finally, we stop in Baltimore. John Harbaugh with the media. So apparently, Harbaugh and I think his brother and his family visited the White House and met with President Trump. And so I couldn't exactly hear the question, but I believe the question posed to him was something along the lines of, you visited the White House, yet President Trump has said derogatory things about the Baltimore area, blah, 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 blah. And then Harbaugh reacted this way.
Well, how you frame that question? I would frame the question like, you got a chance to go visit with the president, man. What was that experience like? It was amazing. It was awesome. And I promise you, I root for our president. You know, I want our president to be successful, just like I want my quarterback to be successful.
A little hint of Norm MacDonald in there.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you say that. Yeah, towards the end.
Yes.
Like when he's, yeah.
I'll play it again. Listen at the end.
Well, how you frame that question? I would frame the question like, you got a chance to go visit with the president, man. What was that experience like? It was amazing. It was awesome.
Coming up.
And I promise you, I root for our president. You know, I want our president to be successful.
Right there.
Yeah.
I want
him.
My
yes.
quarterback to be successful.
Like Norm MacDonald.
And he should kill your wife and a waiter.
No. And lastly, he says the visit was terrific.
It was an amazing experience. You know, it's not often you get invited and you get a chance to do something like that as a family. You know, we were there. My daughter was there. Jim's daughters were there. My mom and dad were there. My mom and President Trump, you know, just seeing how he treated her was really meaningful.
And so apparently
that's
a very
great.
Good experience.
That's great to hear that. Yes. By the way, did you see the Browns unveiling of their new helmet?
And the guy fell into the water.
Wow. Look at this video.
I know, but it was all staged.
Oh, come on. Yeah, was it really?
Yeah, because it was dude wipes, and then they posted the dude wiped out. It's all staged.
Really?
To go viral. Yep.
So I saw the headline.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I can see it looks like he just does it on purpose.
Yeah, and then the video got posted and wiped out.
And I saw it.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
You know, I saw it right before. Right before I came in, I saw it. I'm like,
it worked. It worked. Aye. Video went viral. Dude wipes got their money worth.
We will continue.
Yeah, they got the dude wipes right there. You know, and it makes sense. Dude wipes with that brown collar helmet makes sense. Barnacle parasite thing.
Yes.
That attaches themselves to these polar bears. Yeah, makes total sense.
See, I had no idea about this. So, like, there, when you said it worked, it didn't work on me until just now. You had to tell me.
No. It worked. It got people to watch it.
I know, but if we didn't know, like, I had no idea dude wipes was...
I didn't either. I only saw the video.
There's a sign.
I never recognized or noticed that. That was just an advertisement and noise.
Wait a minute. Where is the giant dude wipes on the helmet?
You gotta go back in the beginning when the cover's on it.
Oh, it's on the cover.
On the cover, yes.
Yeah, okay.
All I saw was two steps down.
There's a sign right there too.
But the amazing thing is you got dude wipes and you got a poop looking helmet.
That is true.
I mean, the Browns have a poop-looking helmet. That's all I can tell you. A
poop-looking team, too.
Very much so. I'll go around the NFL a little bit more next hour with the Dolphins, who will be highlighted.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Coming up next, I see a man on hold. We had a friendly bet yesterday that never got resolved. We never got the answer to it. And Kenny in Queens took it into his own hands. So we'll see if there's a resolution there or not.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So yesterday we were taken off of CBS Sports Network for a few hours to put on a friendly soccer game in Singapore that no one attended. And then when that was done, like the final 20 minutes of the show, they put on college bowling. So we were having a discussion about college bowling. It was Wichita State and Wisconsin Whitewater that were going up against one another in this bowling match. And I said, what do you think that bowling coach there is making for Wichita State? And you said $100,000 or more. And I said, nah, I don't think so. I think it's got to be below six figures. So we were digging into all the public records at Wichita State. And we found the volleyball coach, the women's bowling coach, the basketball coach, the baseball, everybody.
Except for this guy.
Except for this guy.
So it was either he's doing it out of the kindness of his heart and he's older and he's retired and doesn't want any money, or they're paying him so much money as a bowling coach, they're paying him some other way and they don't want it to be part of the public record.
So the bet was null and void for that day until we got more information. Nobody paid anybody. I was feeling pretty good about my chances when I saw the salaries of some of the other coaches. Then I saw the baseball coach. I was like, okay, you know, he was somewhere like $300,000. So we weren't sure. Kenny in Queens was listening and he needed some more information. Kenny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, boys. How are you?
All right,
good.
Kenny, what's happening, brother?
I wish I come with a final answer. I do not, but it is a fun story to tell.
Okay.
So I'm an everyday listener. I call once in a while. I usually call it a Boomer Shops. And so I call. I see the number online, and I'm like, you know what? The women's coach Sal's up there. I'm going to give him a call. So I give him a call, and it's actually the guy, Rick, the head coach. So I said, hey, you know, hope you're having a good day. I said, I'm from New York. We have a big sports radio here. And a friendly bet was put on, and it's an under-over for your salary. You don't have to tell me the salary, just under-over. Would you comment? And he says, no, and he hung right up
on it. Oh, man. Oh, it's well over 100 then.
No, I don't know about that. I mean, he could be embarrassed by it and hanging up. I mean, that's so funny. If you're sitting in your office at Wichita State and Kenny from Queens goes, hey, I'm from New York. We got a radio show. Yo, Kenny, I appreciate you doing that legwork and getting him on the phone, but I feel like there's something shady going on here, and I got some noise in the background there. Yeah. So something shady going on here. We're never going to get this answer.
Wow, we got to get to the bottom of this, man.
I shouldn't say there's something shady. I'm joking around.
I mean, it is Wichita State bowling, so we're not really sure.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a story that was told to me yesterday. You know the guy, this guy by the name of Jim Murphy, he wrote the book Inner Excellence. That's the book that A.J. Brown was reading on the side.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
I interviewed him yesterday for Game Time. And he also wrote a book about leadership in the dugout. In baseball, and he spoke to 39 managers and general managers combined, because he was a baseball player, played for the Chicago Cubs for 1 year, and he said he was trying to get a hold of Dusty Baker, and he called the 800 number of the San Francisco Giants when Dusty was the manager there, and somebody answered, and he said, "Can I speak to Dusty Baker, please?" And the person on the other end of the phone said, "Yeah, hold on," and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, this is Dusty. Like, they sent it right to his office.
Wow.
Yeah, so this Jim Murphy, a guy who has a unique, real unique story, unbelievable backstory about how all of this came about. You know, he was a performance coach before, you know, the A.J. Brown stuff hit in January. On January 12th, I believe it was the Philadelphia Eagles playoff game, their wild card game. And he had sold maybe about 9,000 books that he had wrote this book back in 2009. He refreshed it in 2020 and then sold about 9,000 books. Nothing. He was like 585,000 on the New York Times bestseller list.
I mean, that list goes that long?
Yes. Wow. Yes. And then right after people figured out what A.J. Brown was reading. And then, of course, A.J. gives a interview about it. That book shot up to number one on the New York Times bestseller list within a month.
That's incredible.
Sold over 200,000 books. And this guy, Jim Murphy, is really quite the interesting character. As a matter of fact, a number of athletes, and especially golfers, have used him to be able to accomplish things that they never thought they could accomplish.
Did A.J. Brown say how he found the book?
He found the book from one of his teammates.
Oh, okay.
One of his teammates gave it. Now, the interesting thing about all of this, and I don't know the answer to this, and Jim Murphy did not know the answer to this yesterday when I asked him this question. I said, did A.J. Brown get fined for having that book on the sideline? Now, there's the uniform police.
Very strict.
Very strict about the uniform code. Very strict about not wearing unlicensed merchandise on the sidelines. And
right.
There's no way a book like, you know, Inner Excellence is licensed by the NFL at this point.
Yeah.
But it also goes to show you the power of the NFL sideline and why the NFL is very, very particular about what is on their sideline.
Well, I think they definitely would have had to fine A.J. Brown or say you can't do this again and send out a memo to everybody. No, yeah, but I mean, because anybody now can get paid from whoever. Like, if you are a good player and a book publisher comes to you, like, we'll give you all you have to do just for 5 minutes, you know, bring this book out and hopefully you get on camera while you're reading it, and we'll give you, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, bang, just like that. Yeah. That's all you have to do.
You know, he, this guy, Jim Murphy, had been working with a couple PGA Tour professionals. They had won big events with him in the mid-2000s. He also worked for Yum Brands,
KFC Yum.
Yeah, yeah. So he also worked within that. So he had a life. He had a pretty good life going on. But when this hit, all of a sudden it exploded. And it really is. You know, I was reading some of the passages, and then we also had a picture of A.J. Brown's favorite stuff that he was reading. And, you know, it's all about your inner peace and being your best when you're at your most anxious and all the, you know, kind of leadership stuff and
hell,
psychological stuff.
Worked for A.J. Brown, didn't it?
It did, and I think it's working for a lot of people out there now.
Yeah, I mean, even all the controversy last year, A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts, they figured out a way to be a Super Bowl-winning combination.
All I could think about was like, man, if I ever wore something on the sideline that was not licensed by the NFL, I would get fined. I don't think I ever really did that. I don't ever remember getting fined for anything. But I know other players would try to sneak things on, whether it be like a little message on their wristbands or remember Jim... Jim McMahon wore the headband. That was a big controversy.
Right.
So, and the NFL really polices their sidelines because, you know, they ask, obviously, a ton of money from all of their sponsors. So I totally understand why they do that.
Right. Like if, for example, Mountain Dew is in an NFL sponsor and you see like a long snapper there just popping open a Mountain Dew on camera, that guy's going to get his ass fined.
Right. But here's where all of this stuff came to a head, I believe. And I may be a little bit off, but I think I'm pretty much spot on. So at one point, Coca-Cola was the official beverage of the NFL. So it was Powerade, Coca-Cola, everything. And of course, Jerry Jones, being the entrepreneur he is, he owned Dallas Stadium. He owned the stadium. I'm not talking about Jerry's World now. I'm talking about when he first bought the Cowboys and fired Tom Landry and brought in Jimmy Johnson, and they became the Cowboys of today. He basically sold, and I think I have this correct because I remember doing some Monday night games down there, the stadium pouring rights to Pepsi, even though the NFL's official drink was Coke.
Mm.
And he had Pepsi signs all over the stadium. You couldn't miss them.
Yeah.
So he was saying, look, yeah, you're the official drink of the league, but you're not the official drink of my stadium.
A lot of controversy with Coke and the Cowboys, huh?
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
Balls.